Let's spend some time together with our younger selves. In 1967, the Rolling Stones were instructed to sing the lyrics, "Let's spend some time together," on The Ed Sullivan Show, because the actual lyrics, "Let's spend the night together," were deemed too risque for network television. And so, if you watch a video of the performance, you'll hear them clearly articulate the sanitized lyrics. While it's true that Jagger and bassist Bill Wyman engaged in hilarious and impressively acrobatic eye-rolling every time the line passed their lips, they most definitely sang, "Let's spend some time together." Yet for decades afterwards, Jagger would insist that he and his bandmates had deliberately mumbled the lyrics as an act of protest. I can so relate. Not to being a rock star sex symbol. Editor's note, great instance of the obligatory touch of self-aware humility. But to looking back on my past self with embarrassment and even a touch of shame. I can't believe I did that. Look, it's common to regret our actions. And not just when we were 25. I can replay last week and cringe at things I said and didn't say, at things I did and didn't do. I recall moments of cowardice, of utter cluelessness, and downright mean-spiritedness. Editor's note, easy boy, this is a newsletter, not a confessional. And there's something poignant and quite useful about coming to grips with our shortcomings, because without awareness, there's no possibility for change. And yet, wallowing in guilt or shame is like touching a hot stove and keeping your hand on it. Why are you burning your palm? So I really learned my lesson this time. Aversion can kick off a change process, but it can't sustain it. As Richard Boyatzis points out in his book, The Science of Change, sustainable transformation requires what he calls PEA, positive emotional attraction. And one of the qualities of PEA is a nervous system tilted toward the parasympathetic, what Boyatzis calls the renewal circuit, rather than the sympathetic, which you may recognize as the source of fight or flight energy. If you're criticizing yourself, your mind codes that as an attack. Doesn't matter that it's thoughts and words rather than sticks and stones. Doesn't matter that it's coming from inside the house rather than outside. Watch any horror movie if you don't think that inside the house isn't the most effing terrifying prospect. And under attack, your mind activates the sympathetic nervous system, which is all about protection and prevention. In other words, you turtle up emotionally and often physically, you know, shoulders hunched, head forward, neck tight, eyes and jaw clenched. In that state, meaningful positive change is impossible. Looking back with compassion. So what's the alternative to getting down on yourself for your past shortcomings? Self-compassion. Now, that doesn't mean giving yourself a free pass. Instead, it means recognizing that you were doing what you thought you needed in order to get through a particular experience. And by you, in what you thought, I'm not talking about your conscious mind. I'm talking about the deep inner programming that you constructed to stay alive and as safe as possible when you were young. I know you don't want to excuse any prior bad behavior with psychobabble, but that's not what this is. Rather, it's exploring those hidden forces that compromised your aspirations for your best self so they can come into the light of awareness. As long as they remain inaccessible to your conscious mind, they run the show. But once you know what they are, you can begin to root them out. Your turn. Think about a time when you were far from your best. If your body responds with some fight or flight energy or begins to fold and collapse from guilt or shame, simply breathe. And look, if this feels like too much, then abort immediately and don't go there again without professional support. If you're good, though, pay attention to the underlying fear you were feeling at that moment. It's there. And be curious. What's the prediction of worse suffering if you had behaved differently? Once it comes to you, it may seem childish or foolish. You may think, but that's ridiculous. That could never happen. Beautiful. That means you're collapsing the old belief by subjecting it to the light of actual experience. You're bumping an ancient, unexamined belief about yourself, about others, or about the world that you may have adopted before you could even talk. You're bumping that into reality, what you remember from your life or know about the world. Postscript. Dougal Hind, author of At Work in the Ruins, Finding Our Place in a Time of Science, Climate Change, Pandemics, and All the Other Emergencies, reread a poem that he had written in his 20s at the end of a youthful romantic entanglement and felt embarrassed by it. He writes, "I remember reading an interview with Nick Cave a few years after the boatman's call, in which he sneered at his slightly younger self for making such melodrama out of an ordinary heartbreak.
I don't believe in an interventionist God. But I know, darling, that you do."
And there was a time when I would have winced at this poem for similar reasons. But I'm kinder toward that young man now, and inclined to think that our youthful longings can be a training for a larger longing, that our ordinary heartbreaks are what carve us into the people we have become. May we all be kinder to our younger selves, that they might become our allies in pursuing our best, authentic selves today. Hey, my goal for this newsletter is to encourage you to identify what matters most to you so you can get massive traction and move that work forward. And the first element of what matters most is your vision of your best self. And for teams and organizations, your collective vision of a grand, uplifting purpose for working together. If you want to share what matters most with me, I'd love to have a conversation with you. Drop me an email, howie@askhowie.com. And tell me, what matters most in your world right now?